gentlemen, welcome to the Blake and Sal Show with Mark. For over 10 years, dominating the podcast world. Now sit back, relax, and get ready to have some fun. Let's welcome your hosts, Blake, Sal, and Mark.
Hello and welcome to the Blake and Sal Show Archive, the first archive show of 2024. I'm going to tell everybody right now, there's not going to be one every month this year. But here we are, we are taking this week off. It's my anniversary week, and I'm actually not podcasting at all this week. So I decided we're taking the week off. I'm not even doing horse-minute recordings. We were taking the whole week off, and we'll be back next week with a brand new show. And I've been telling people, this first couple months of the year are going to be nuts between just travel and other things going on. It's a very busy first couple months of the year for us. So we're taking this week off. So, for this week's show, I'm going to move things over from Spreaker back over to Spotify. I found Mandy's audio blog that she did when she was blogging. And so it was called A Messy Magical Motherhood. And instead of making it its own feed, I figured we'd save it for an archive show. And I knew we were having this one up in February. So that is going to be today's show. You're going to hear every single one of those audio blogs in a row. So, sit back and enjoy Mandy doing her audio blog. We'll be back next week. Have a good day, everybody. Enjoy the show.
Milwaukee is in my bloodline. I'm a proud product of a hardworking family dedicated to serving the city of Milwaukee and one of seven valedictorians in my class at my Milwaukee public school. I've only left for a semester of college, only to realize that my family is my home and my home is Milwaukee. Numerous campus and major changes later, I got my two-year degree from, you guessed it, Milwaukee Area Technical College. My father proposed to my mother by saying they were going to have a baby girl and that her name would be Amanda Nicole. Though I prefer to go by Mandy now, Amanda is still reserved for important documents and is used by my parents when they're less than thrilled with me. If you would have asked 7-year-old Mandy what life would be like now, she'd without a doubt mention a pet dolphin. If you asked 14-year-old Mandy how life would be, she'd tell you that she'd be married to a Backstreet Boy. Even the 19-year-old me would tell you that 13 years later, I'd be a newlywed teacher planning for my family of two children, 2 years apart. I then received a Christmas card that changed my life. You see, the card was from a young man named Blake I'd befriended on LiveJournal and was accompanied by a bracelet, mixed CD, and the promise to come visit me all the way from this foreign land called New Jersey. Within a year, we met, had first and second dates at funerals, got engaged, turned Milwaukee into his home, and got married in a whirlwind that we're still recovering from. It hasn't always been easy or fun, and though we've been through more loops and twists and turns on this roller coaster called marriage, there's no one else that I could see myself running through the turnstiles of life with. On June 27th, 2008, our world changed forever as our yodeling, mohawked baby boy was born. Christian Joseph, CJ, is our handsome handful of an 8-year-old. If his blistering blue eyes and crater-like dimples don't stop you in your tracks, his belly laugh will. He has ADHD and autism, but through medication, therapies, school changes, and unconditional love from the village we've created together, he's out to show the world that actions speak louder than labels. He never stops amazing me, and I'm so proud to be his mama. After much thought and debate, and an assist from PCOS, he is our only. I work full-time out of the home by choice and necessity. I can also be found volunteering at our church, Christian school, or for one of the causes I'm passionate about. In the middle of my own slow and steady weight loss journey, I make an appointment with myself each morning that I can't cancel because it's written in my planner and my planner is my Bible. Diet Coke might as well run through my veins and you will rarely see my nails without polish on them. I have this crafty, creative side that loves going into craft stores and coming out with new projects that would have been just cheaper to buy. I could always use a margarita and a nap, and my life's goal is to figure out how to have both simultaneously. I am blessed beyond belief to put my boy to bed every night in the very room I grew up in. We live with my parents, brother, and two dogs in a three-generational Mexican-Sicilian version of parenthood. Having been born and raised in Milwaukee, I am proud to raise my child in the city that shaped me into the woman I am today. I am also excited to write for MKE Mom's Blog and join this incredible group of women who have also made Milwaukee their home. The doctor gave you a diagnosis today. You're on the verge of getting kicked out of a second daycare. You wake up to the sound of your son banging his head against the wall instead of an alarm. You encountered a woman who questioned your parenting and your son's mental health in the craft store. You've had to explain to your son numerous times why kids mock or refuse to play with him. At first, you're going to think advocating for the cause is most important, but at some point, you'll realize your true priority is advocating for your son. Not only will you have to prepare him for the world, but you have to prepare the world for him. You'll be his voice until he can speak, but you'll be his guidepost always. These next 5 years are going to be some of the hardest of your life. You will lose friends and family over his diagnosis. You are going to question yourself a lot and blame yourself even more. Repeat after me. This isn't my fault. Along with autism, he will pick up an ADHD diagnosis, and against your better judgment, he'll start medication. Don't let this decision weigh you down, because it'll be one of the best you'll make. And while it will take you a while to find a pair of doctors that will work well for him, you'll know when you find the right ones. Actually, you'll spend a lot of time finding out what works for your family, and more importantly, what doesn't. You feel isolated and helpless and scared. I remember all those feelings and still get them from time to time. Let those moments and feelings help to shape your parenting, but don't allow them to define you or your journey. Let the hugs, kisses, and milestones met fuel your soul and aid you in fighting the battles. Remember them all, because it goes so fast. Today, you have a rambunctious 3-year-old. Somehow we blinked, and now he's a handful of an 8-year-old. He's a math whiz who likes to draw, create with Legos, and play with his very own friends. You no longer fear going into his backpack or to the school for conferences. His 504 plan, the very plan that you fought tooth and nail for, is working. Now, I'm not naive, as I know there will be new challenges as he gets older. We hate seeing writing assignments in his homework folder lately. But if we can get through the years of potty training, we can get through anything. No matter what, be sure to look around and consistently thank your village. You are not a one-woman show, though that I know you feel you must be sometimes. You will make a difference because of that little boy in your lap who is trying to wipe away all of your tears. It's such a small gesture, but such a great thing for a child you were told would never have sympathy for others. He gets his resilience from you, you know. So wipe those tears and look into those deep blue eyes that you can't believe you helped create. sneak a peek at those beautiful pearly whites. His smile won't be as perfect as his baby teeth fall out and the adult ones grow in their place. But those dimples, they are still there and untangle your fears and doubts every single time. As you walk out of that room holding a tiny, sticky hand, hold your head high and know that it will all work out the way it should. I promise that it's going to be all right. I've been on antidepressants since I was 18. I remember crying in the car to my grandmother after the appointment because I didn't understand why I needed a pill to help me function. The words that came out of her mouth next forever changed me. Mouse, you have one of the most genuine hearts. If you see someone suffering, you'd do anything to help them. Don't be ashamed to take help yourself because your brain works differently. I can tell when I've missed my dose. I've become in tune with my body to know that I hate the feelings of unwarranted emptiness and unsolicited hopelessness. I'm not addicted to my medication. I am addicted to functioning clearly. My husband feels similarly about his prescription as well. When he moved to Milwaukee, he started college. For one semester, I thought he was going to classes. And for one semester, he sat in his car because he couldn't function in class. I held his hand as he received an ADD diagnosis at the age of 23. He can tell when he's missed a dose. And after being together for over a decade, I can tell when he's missed a dose too, as I'm sure he can tell when I have. We've unfairly accused each other during arguments of not taking our meds, and each time we realize we've taken it too far. We're a better couple when we're on our meds because we're able to function as individuals first. Our son was diagnosed with ADHD in October of 2013, and putting him on medication was one of the hardest decisions I've made in my almost 9 years of mothering. Now, I'm no stranger to the stigma behind taking medication for a chemical imbalance, and neither is my husband. But we can take our pills in the safe haven of our house and do not have to tell anyone except our chosen medical professionals. For Christian, who'd need a dose at school, many more people would know and judge him and our parenting choices. I struggled with our decision even as I held the prescription in my hand at the pharmacy. And as my child had problems swallowing the pills at first, I felt like I'd failed as a parent. He didn't get to make that choice that his father and I had. We'd made this decision for him as his parents. And in a moment that brought everything full circle, I heard my grandmother's voice in my head. If you see someone suffering, you'd do anything to help them. I didn't fail as a parent. I was doing the exact opposite. I armed my child with the tool he needed to help him learn in the classroom and to function without suffering as a result of his chemical imbalance. Christian's medication routine has evolved into one, which he only takes medicines at home or out with us. As we were walking to the arena to take in a Milwaukee Wave game with one of his friends from school, I took him aside as we waited to walk at an intersection and asked him if he wanted me to give him his afternoon pill in secret. He looked at me with wisdom so much greater than a boy of 8 and said, "Don't worry, Mama, I've got this." He then ran to his friend and started a conversation. "So I take medicine. It helps me focus and control my emotions. I don't feel like Christian without it. My mom has it in her purse and will give it to me at the game. Okay?" "Okay. I take a pill sometimes for my allergies. So on YouTube..." I looked at my dad, who joined me on the trip, and smiled. My son had come to a conclusion it had taken me years to figure out. His medication helps him to be the best version of himself he can be. And that version of Christian has improved in school and has friends who understand. A family is only as strong as its weakest link. If someone has a cold, the whole family is affected. Mental health should be no different than physical health. My depression isn't different than my hypothyroidism. My husband's ADD isn't different than his high blood pressure. There's only a stigma if we allow there to be one. As my friend, my son and his friend taught me that afternoon. Our family is better when we're medicated. I don't feel chained to my depression. My boys' brains don't feel so disconnected from their bodies. We become three strong parts to an even stronger whole. We owe it to each other to be the best versions of ourselves so that we can be better together. The greatest gift a mother receives is the one that cannot be found on any registry, her motherly instinct. We gain a sixth sense to protect and nurture our child always. It's knowing that you know your child better than anyone else. Doctors, teachers, the media. They may be the professionals in their chosen fields, but you are the expert on your kiddo. Trust your instincts, Mama. It's that first time that only your touch can comfort your newborn baby. It's the eyes in the back of your head that prevent a trip to the emergency room. It's deciphering whether a tummy ache is the flu or just farts. It's a lifetime sentence of a gut feeling that won't go away. From the moment you panic because they slept through the night to any moment that you leave them in someone else's care. It's finding that balance between tugging the reins to keep them protected to letting them go, to let them find themselves in this great big world. Just like being a web-shooting arachnid superhero, parenting is a never-ending lesson and the greatest of responsibilities. Each and every decision you make does not just affect you, but also the life of the tiny human you are somehow trusted with. Most decisions we make do not affect them in the long run, because in the battle of pizza versus tacos, face it, we all come out winners. But we do often come face to face with many decisions that will affect their lives long after we're gone. Last year, I hit one of those decisions head on. I realized I'd pushed my motherly instincts to the side for too long. I figured out that my son should repeat second grade before anyone else. I realized that this was a long time coming as well. After his autism diagnosis, we worked with our school system to get him an individualized education program, IEP. At our IEP meeting, we learned that he'd be entering a half-day 3K program just a month later. My husband and I hadn't discussed school yet, and were a bit leery about starting him in school too young, as his birthday is at the end of June. In the end, we agreed because we wanted to get our son the support that he needed. The 4 years that followed were filled with lots of meetings, forms, and tests, along with an added ADHD diagnosis. Christian transitioned from special education to a mainstream class, from an IEP to a 504 plan, and through three schools in an attempt to find the best environment for him. Motherly instincts aren't always spot on, hence the change in schools. Motherly instincts also aren't always packaged neatly as epiphanies, with birds chirping, heavens parting, and harps playing. Sometimes they slap you in the face hard. When you're told your son, who is placing far below baselines in both reading and math on testing, would be more than ready for a third grade in less than 2 months. When you're shown work that other students had completed to realize your son was nowhere near this level. When you realize that the ball was dropped and the 504 plan put in place for his growth, success, and safety was not being followed. Trust your instincts, Mama. On the way home, I told my husband that I thought Christian should repeat second grade, and like the former forensics nerd I am, I gave a detailed argument as to why. I explained that this decision was 4 years in the making, and if we didn't do it now, when we were already changing schools, that we might never have another opportunity. Though leery at first, my husband understood and eventually agreed. I was later cornered, scolded, and told that the decision wasn't mine to make by my son's former principal. I was told that I didn't know what I was saying, and that I'd be hurting my son in the long run. I took his comments in stride because I knew I needed to trust my motherly instincts. When proposing the idea to Christian, he admitted that he felt like he was drowning in class. He exclaimed that he was in a constant sensory overload because he could never catch up. It felt like a punch in the gut to find out how my boy truly felt. But I feel that deep down inside, I had that gut feeling all along. Christian has made the most of his second time in second grade. He started at a new school and started to flourish both academically and socially. Getting him out of bed is no longer a fight, most days. And the hardest part about picking him up from school is waiting for the courses of goodbyes daily. Opening his folder to look at his assignments isn't torturous, and conferences no longer bring me to tears. It's our job as parents to make the decisions for our children until they can help us or make them on their own. And while it's true that motherly instincts aren't always right, sometimes they're all we have to go by, along with a little faith and a little blind luck. Trust your instincts, Mama. I recently earned my orange belt in Taekwondo. It's quickly become my new favorite accessory. It may not be my most fashionable or the most budget-friendly, but it is the accessory that has taught me the most. To the naked eye, it's just a piece of fabric. To those familiar with the sport, it's merely the first step in a long journey toward the highly revered black belt. To my son, it's an attempt for his mother to bond over a mutual interest. But to me, the orange belt is the greatest symbol of both pride earned and humility learned. My journey with Taekwondo began when I was about my son's age. I begged my parents to sign me up for a class at our local community center during the first run of Power Rangers popularity. My dreams of taking over being the Pink Ranger were short-lived, however, as I held onto the wall each time I went to kick. Coordination and grace were two things I was not blessed with. During my son's first belt testing, the grandmaster asked for a show of hands of parents who also participate in Taekwondo. He was deeply disappointed when no one raised their hand. But when a grandmaster in Taekwondo recommends that you take up the sport, you resist and come up with private excuses until you wind up tying your own gi on. This time around, I was able to step away from the wall and became friends with my old foe, the front kick. But in an incident that my husband has deemed Hopgate 2017, I sprained my right calf muscle and ego in an epic game of Hop Hop Goose while chasing my son. We attend our class together on Saturday mornings due to soccer scheduling, and it's brought us closer together. It's a very different experience to call the kid that you drove to practice sir and to bow to him moments after you help him get his uniform on. I think my son secretly enjoys it, since he is a higher rank than I am, based on when he received his orange belt. It's definitely humbling to think you've learned your belt form just to have your son shake his head and fix your stance. Between learning the sport from someone entering their senior year in high school and testing self-defense moves with children even younger than yours, I've learned that respect is key in martial arts, and it is not given, but it is truly earned. I've also been honored to help the instructor and be the recipient of respect from children who don't know me, but are thankful for the assistance. It was not easy to try something new at 32, but it's been so rewarding. Running laps is the bane of my existence, with jumping jacks a close second. But it has gotten easier in these 6 months. My punches and kicks are getting stronger, but more importantly, so am I. The cherry on the top of this Sunday of awesomeness is being able to look at my kiddo and see him wink at me in pride. He was the one cheering loudest when I got my orange belt. It's a really cool experience to work with him now towards earning our yellow belts and to high-five him on the gym floor when we've learned a skill or mastered a piece of belt form. I've been able to witness firsthand growth in my kiddo that is truly incredible. He didn't even want to get in line during his own first practice because he was so shy. Getting him to volunteer was a faraway dream. In the past year, thanks to his determination and fantastic instructors, he has volunteered and become a leader in his peer group. I've seen this change in him outside of that gymnasium, too. I can't wait to see where Taekwondo takes us together. 31 candy alternatives for trick-or-treat this Halloween. Let me be the first to say that I love candy. Kit Kats, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups, Hershey Bars. Chocolate fills the cracks in the soul. And let's not forget Swedish Fish, Sweet Tarts, and Sour Patch Kids. I don't discriminate in my sugar fixes. I love all candy equally. I love candy as much as I love uninterrupted bathroom time, a leisurely trip to Target, and that first sip of margarita on a girl's night. Wait, scratch that last one. Tequila is greater than candy. However, After multiple Halloween events, a few bouts of trick-or-treating, a classroom party, and a care package from family in another state, we are left with more candy than we can handle. We inevitably end up throwing some out because our son has OD'd on sugary treats, and we notice that our pants are fitting a little tight after taking our parent tax, which is totally a thing, by the way. Our son is lucky to not have any food allergies, but there are many children who do not even get to trick-or-treat because they cannot enjoy any of the goodies that they receive. Between the great sugar overdose of 2016 and realizing that all children should enjoy Halloween festivities, the SOS was born. I sent out an SOS to my village via Facebook as to what treats people have given out or received that were not candy. Though a few cried foul, the majority of the answers were very useful and thoughtful. A big shout out to those who helped me create this list, though I know it's not all inclusive. So, 31 treats to hand out this Halloween that are not candy. Glow sticks. These light up accessories complement any costume and help provide a little safety while collecting goodies. Stampers. Fun for all ages, but beware that these do not just stamp on skin and paper. Tattoos. My kid loves temporary tattoos because he gets to act like his mom and dad. Pencils. This may seem boring, but all kids use pencils at school, and they could make homework time just a bit more fun. Erasers. This is the same as pencils, but it takes the sting out of making mistakes. Mini notepads. If your kiddo is anything like mine, you have a ton of notebooks lying around with doodles and stories. Finger flashlights. These are another fun way to light dark trick-or-treat paths. Freezy Pops, also known as Ice Pops or Otter Pops, these are a perfect way to give kids a bit of summer in the fall. Stickers. These don't have to be Halloween-themed either. Think of all the options. Bubbles. What kid doesn't love bubbles? Play-Doh. This is a classic, sure to help spark creativity in your little goblin. Hot chocolate or apple cider packets. The colder weather will either be here or on its way, so help warm up the trick-or-treaters. Goldfish, Teddy Graham, pretzel single-serve bags. These are much better to throw in lunchboxes than candy, if they last that long. Bags of unpopped microwave popcorn help to provide the concessions for an in-home movie night. Bags of chips. A little bit of salt proves that not all treats have to be sweet. Juice boxes or pouches. Even princesses and superheroes need to wet their whistles on their merry way. Water flavor packets. With fall sports aplenty, giving these out helps to keep the kids hydrated. Fruit snacks. So many flavors and characters to choose from. Applesauce. There are cups and pouches for even the tiniest trick-or-treaters to enjoy. Coupons for treats. McDonald's often has coupons available for purchase to hand out for ice cream or apple slices. Granola bars. These are a surefire way to keep your kiddos from being hangry after school. Rubber bracelets. A classic wardrobe accessory that will last much longer than a gumball. Vampire teeth. Whether or not Dracula is at your door, vampire teeth are a fun accessory for all in costume. Spider rings. But please be warned that not all kids think these are cool, as my son would run from you screaming if he saw these. Bouncy balls. If your child has never asked you for one of these in a quarter machine at a store, consider yourself one of the lucky ones. Mazes. Remember that you can throw these in your purse to help distract your child or children when they're antsy. Books. If your child has outgrown his or her books, this could provide a neat way to get rid of the books without a lot of hassle. Bookmarks. You can't have books without bookmarks. Polaroids. This was one that I've never heard of, but it's a great way to give kiddos a memento and have some fun. Trading cards. If you have a lot of cards lying around or love trading cards, this is a cool alternative that could leave kids interacting with each other. Did someone say Pokemon? Coins. This was definitely a controversial choice, as some did not like the idea of pennies. But a penny saved is a penny earned. Phew! What a list! The best part is that most of these are available where you'd get your Halloween candy. If you do choose one of these non-candy treats, please consider decorating a pumpkin teal and putting it on your doorstep. The Teal Pumpkin Project helps raise awareness of food allergies and promotes inclusion of all trick-or-treaters throughout the Halloween season. And if you do get an influx of candy, don't throw it out. Our good friends at the Ronald McDonald House also accept donations of candy for the families being served who cannot go out and trick-or-treat themselves. Also check with local dentists who will often buy the candy from you and donate it to our troops. No matter what you decide to hand out this Halloween season, have a happy one. Is there anything not on the list that should be? Do you know of any local organizations that buy back candy or take donations?
I often hear about how much my son is the spitting image of my husband. They have the same piercing blue eyes and dimples you could lose a diamond. They are both as tall as the day is long, and shopping for their shoes will always be a hassle. Taking a brush to their hair is an exercise in futility, and their cheesy grins are contagious. Their similarities aren't just physical, either. Blake and Christian both have an affinity for professional wrestling and anything Disney-related. Both are fantastic mathematicians, but are two of the reasons why Spellcheck was invented. They are both loud and passionate and impulsive, which makes a lot of sense because they both have an ADHD diagnosis. I know that ADHD is a chronic neurodevelopmental disorder. I know that Blake was diagnosed as an adult and Christian was diagnosed when he was 6. I know that both take different medications to help them throughout the day. I know how to navigate a Section 504 meeting and advocate for Christian's success in school. I know how to play to their strengths and how to help them adapt to and power through their weaknesses, most of the time. I know that being both the mother and wife to two amazing guys with ADHD can be so very difficult, but all the more rewarding. October is ADHD Awareness Month. Even though I am very aware of the reality of ADHD on a daily basis, I don't know what their brains go through. I don't know how the medication helps. I don't know why certain accommodations are vital to a good day at school. I do not know what it is like to live with ADHD. I am so very lucky that both Blake and Christian are secure enough in their diagnoses and are open enough to look me in the eye and tell me exactly what they're feeling when I ask the following question. What is living with ADHD like? Blake compared his brain to a computer, which makes total sense if you know my husband. He says that without his medication and other interventions, his brain collects thoughts on a computer browser, like a computer browser collects tabs without closing them. After some time, his brain fatigues and eventually, like a computer, it shuts down and stops working. His medication, his lists, and his routine help him focus and remember to close tabs after he's done with them. It all helps his brain operate consistently. Christian took a different approach, but one that embodies his daring spirit. He said that it feels like he's on a roller coaster each and every day. Without his medication and interventions we have in place, he reaches the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. He told me that he feels like he is being tossed around in the roller coaster car and no one can hear because it's too loud and going too fast. After his medicine kicks in, or after he sees his therapist, or after he has the time to regroup after the school day, he exclaimed that he can finally get off the ride. He told me that the people who support him are like the ticket taker or the person with him on the roller coaster who can help him be less afraid of it all. Know that by hearing these stories of two people with ADHD, you now only know the two stories of two people with ADHD. Each and every person with ADHD is different in their abilities and how they process things. An intervention that works for my son or a process that works for my husband may not work for another. It is truly amazing how two very similar people can produce two very different but powerful answers to the same question. It made me truly realize that the word deficit in their diagnosis could not be further from the truth. There is no deficit in their self-awareness or in the power of their brains. There is also no deficit in their love for me, which is probably my favorite of their similarities.
Santa, I would love for you to meet my son.
He loves you. But he gets scared when other people are around, I said, with the same hopeful smile that I'd smiled many times in the past. My husband was moving Christian to a secluded spot, and from across the room we gave each other an all-too-familiar look that encompassed years' worth of Santa struggles with our son, who has autism. Christian loves Santa, but the lights, the sounds, the people, it can all be too much for him. Sensory overload is so very real, and it can make the most joyous of times a nightmare for even the strongest of believers. As his parents, it's our job to adapt and give him the same magical moments other children get to have, especially as he's reaching that age where Santa loses his spark. As Santa sauntered over to the vending machines where Christian was hiding, he asked me what his name was, and I knew we were in good hands. For as many times as we've encountered caring Santas before, not one had ever asked for our son's name. It was such a simple gesture that set me at ease. He greeted Christian, who immediately enveloped him in a hug, and the pair posed for a few pictures. In the past, that would have been the end of our Santa escapade for the year. My husband and I would have high-fived, while our kiddo would have sighed in relief that he got to see his jolly and bearded hero for another year. But this year was so very different. Santa asked a vendor to grab a chair for him and set it in front of a backdrop set up for different characters. He held my son's hand and invited him to sit on his lap as he sat down. Christian, no longer afraid and relishing in the moment, sat down as Santa asked for a few moments alone with our son. My husband and I walked away in awe that this costumed stranger would go so far to help people he'd met moments ago. We peeked around the corner numerous times, thinking that this must be a dream. We smiled at each other with the biggest of grins and hugged each other tight. Our boy was smiling and laughing with Santa. We made everyone look over at the moment because it was such a huge victory for us. Each time we thought the pair was done, he'd hold Christian a little tighter and our boy would smile a little greater. When their time was up, Santa walked towards us and shook our hands. We told him how thankful we were for him, and he said it was his pleasure and that we had a good boy. It looked like he wanted to say something else to us, but Christian ran up so excited that Santa snuck away so we could have a family moment. The rest of the event, it seemed like Christian was walking on air. You couldn't wipe the smile off of his face, and it made my heart swell. Before we left, there was no line to see Santa, which meant that my husband and I could get our pictures taken with the man of the hour. We posed for a picture or two, and when I went to get up, he grabbed my hand with his gloved hand and looked at me with the utmost sincerity. You are raising a sweet boy. We talked about toys at first, but then he told me he was bullied. He warmed up to me quickly, you know. It hasn't happened for a while, but he's not over it, and it still bothers him. He's trying his hardest at school, and made sure I knew that. I told him I'd give him super strength to help him avoid bullies, and super knowledge to help him in school. But a super heart? He's already got one of those. I don't need to help him with that. I told him that I'd tell you guys and to not be mad at me, but keep an eye on him. Don't let bullies get to that beautiful soul of his. This kind man, a stranger to us all, got more out of my son in 10 minutes than my husband and I, or even his therapist, could in over a year. We were very aware of the bullying, both mental and physical, that he dealt with at his previous school, but we had no clue of the lasting damage that it had done to our child. It took a little bit of Santa's magic to get to the bottom of it all. We had an open and honest dialogue on the way home, one of the best conversations that we've had as a family. We've talked about what happened at his previous school, why it was bad, and why the environment he is in now is so much better. We talked about why bullying was wrong and how it made him feel. We told him that there will always be negative people in his life and to never let a bad day get the best of him. We told him to focus on the friends he does have and all of the good things in his life. We threw some more cliches at him about how the past is the past, and although it's all right to live in it, it's not okay to permanently live there, because that's not living at all. At the end of it all, Christian exclaimed again that he wished we would have won the large teddy bear that was being raffled off so he could have given it to the children's hospital. It made me realize that regardless of if he believes in Santa the human for another year or not, that he'll always have the true spirit of the season inside him. To the Santa who sold so many hearts that day, Thank you for the pictures, the memories, and for helping all three of us to believe in your spirit right when we needed it most.
I'm done making New Year's resolutions. There, I said it. I'm done making a grandiose list of very specific things I want to complete in 365 days' time. Whether it is reading a certain amount of books, losing XYZ number of pounds, or saving a predetermined amount of money, I am done. I am done looking at the list I so proudly created when the calendar turned to January and June, and realizing I haven't read, lost, or saved enough. I'm done hitting panic mode right when the holidays hit, just to add one more thing to my plate. Rushing to accomplish the unattainable goals I set forth for myself to do 11 months earlier. I am so type A, it hurts my soul to leave boxes on a to-do list unchecked. But I am also exhausted. All of my best intentions are not enough despite my best efforts. It is unfair to expect so much from myself in addition to being a full-time mom, wife, sister, daughter, friend, and employee. My New Year's resolution is to not make any resolutions. No resolutions, no problems. I am calling it the resolution revolution. I'm not saying I don't want to set goals for myself, but quantifying it seems to be an effort in futility for me. It leads to standards that cannot be achieved, and then I inevitably feel poorly about myself. My goal for 2018 and all the years that follow is to be a little better than I was the year before, and to leave the world a little better as well. It doesn't matter how many books I read, it matters that I read. I never want reading to feel like a chore, because it's one of my favorite things to do. I don't want to finish a book just to raise a number on a list. I want to finish a book because it captivated me. It doesn't matter how much weight I lost, it matters that I am happy and healthy. I want to make conscious choices that help me find the balance between total indulgence and self-sabotage. I never want to head back to justifying an eating disorder. I want to remember how far I've come and not just focus on how further I need to go. It doesn't matter how much money we have saved in the bank, it matters that we are taken care of. It's not about things and dollar signs, contrary to the beliefs of many. It's about experiences and all the things that money cannot buy. Of course, we want to be prepared for emergencies and to pay off some debt, which we are lucky to be able to do, but all the monetary gains in the world mean nothing if I'm away from my boys longer than I need to be. At the end of a year's time, I don't want to look back and think of everything I didn't complete. I also do not want to downplay what I was able to accomplish. As moms, we have to celebrate all of our wins, big and little. Because sometimes we are the only ones who notice that extra 5 pounds or that extra chunk of change in the bank. Most importantly, we need to look at the lives that we are molding and shaping. We want them to see us leading a balanced life and not just living to check off a box. If we've helped them at all to become a better version of themselves, we can consider that the biggest win of all. That's what motherhood and resolutions are all about. The Resolution Revolution. Who's with me? I have fat on my body. Everyone does. I just happen to have more of it than others. It doesn't make me less of a wife, mother, person, or woman. Being fat shouldn't define who I am, but it has for far too long. Each stare, glare, or snicker defined me. I identified with the pessimism until it became all I latched onto. In an attempt to control the negativity, I let an eating disorder define me. Each time I stuck my fingers down my throat, I let defeat define who I was. With therapy and love, you can now define me as a survivor. Nevertheless, the fat remains on my body. You can dress the phrasing up as you wish, using words like curvy, plus-sized, and chubby, but at the end of the day, I have rolls and dimples and folds. But I also have passion, spunk, and determination. All of my flaws, if they must be considered such, and strengths, do define me. They define me together as a woman. I have struggled for years with letting just my body define me. I was the little girl at the public pool in one-piece bathing suit because my friends told me I shouldn't wear a two-piece because I jiggled too much. I was the teenager wearing an oversized shirt over my bathing suit because I didn't want to be stared at like an exhibit on display. And up until last month, I was the woman too afraid to wear a bikini so that I wouldn't offend anyone. The truth is that I was offending only myself the entire time by thinking I wasn't worthy enough of wearing what I wanted. I wasn't speaking up for the little girl who ended up anorexic in second grade in an attempt to fit in. I wasn't speaking up for the teenager who ended up turning to bulimia in an attempt for control. I wasn't speaking up for the woman I fought so strongly to become. So I purchased a bikini online. Even walking into the store to pick it up, I was anxious, as if there would be a crowd picketing with signs and pitchforks. When I tried it on in the dressing room, I had a moment that brought me to tears in all the best ways. I realized that my body, the body that gave life to my child, the body that has volunteered countless hours to causes that fuel my soul, the body that carried me to the top of the tallest building in Wisconsin twice, is worthy of being in a bikini, rolls, dimples, folds, and all. And much to my amazement, no one stared or snickered at me when I put that bikini on for the first time in public. I felt invincible. I jumped and splashed and enjoyed being in the moment with my son and husband, who couldn't have cared less about my attire. I jiggled and wiggled in all the wrong and right places. They love me despite my fat, and maybe I should take a lesson from them and do the same. I will continue to work out and eat better, but it won't be for everyone else. It will be for me and for my boys so that I can be healthier and live longer so we can be a family for as long as possible. I will never lose all of my fat, and I'm not sure if I want to anymore. It's taken me a long time to realize, but I am more than my rolls and dimples and folds, but they are a beautiful part of the woman I've become. So to have a bikini body, you must follow 3 steps. Number 1, have a body. Number 2, put it in a bikini. Number 3, don't apologize. That last step is key. Never apologize for who you are, as you are exactly who you should be. A few Halloweens ago, Christian went as Batman, and so I decided to be the weird, quirky mom, as I am, and dress up as Wonder Woman for trick-or-treating. Since then, Christian may or may not be convinced that I am Wonder Woman. And you know what? I am a superhero. In fact, if you're a mom and listening to this, you are a superhero too. Forget Wonder Woman, Black Widow, and Elektra. Moms, we are the real superheroes. Not all superheroes need capes or fancy costumes, especially as some of us prefer to work incognito. Are you still not convinced you're a superhero? Take a look at some of our superpowers. Our lips contain magical boo-boo healing powers. Our super strength can always pick our children up when they're down, both physically and mentally. We work for truth and justice, just like any other respectable superhero, but we use our words as our greatest weapon. Our supersonic mom voices can rival any expensive gadget Tony Stark has up his sleeve. Ask our embarrassed children on stage or horrified children on the field just how powerful our voices are. Our hearing is impeccable. Not only can we distinguish our child's cries from any others, but we know how to pick the most important words from our children's incessant babble and make it sound like we're paying attention. More importantly, we always know when we need to listen 100%. We can rival the Flash in terms of speed when getting a bucket, saltines, and ginger ale when we hear heaving or our child telling us they are going to be sick. Our super mom-mobiles transport everyone to school, work, soccer practices, church, doctor's appointments, and stores, remarkably unscathed and almost always on time, regardless of when we leave. We have stealthy ninja moves when we sneak in or out of our child's room at night. Though tested and sometimes bent, moms are given superhuman patience the moment their first child is laid in their arms. All moms have a secret lair where gifts are hidden and candy bars are consumed in peace. Moms don't need a bad signal to always answer the calls for help. We just know and we're there as soon as we can be. Each and every mother has a stare that can freeze their children and spouse instantaneously. Multitasking is just another power we have. Can Spider-Man cook dinner, do the dishes, help with the homework, get his steps in for the day, and take out the trash while on a conference call? With great power does come great responsibility, you know. We have an extra set of eyes. They truly are in the back of our head. We know when someone is committing crimes and know when to act. Jumping on the couch again? We know. Slipping the dinner you don't want to eat to the dog while we're taking dishes to the sink? We're not fooled. We see all. Our sense of smell can detect a cup of chocolate milk left under the bed, a chicken nugget caught in a booster seat, or apple slices left in a lunchbox over the weekend. Teeth that weren't brushed, unwashed hands, or armpits in need of deodorant are no match for our super-smelling capabilities. Moms can tell when a baby has a full diaper before the baby does. If this doesn't have you convinced you're a superhero, just ask your children. They might say Batman, Superman, or Spider-Man are their favorites, but their hugs, drawings, and gifts of dandelions say otherwise. So sit back and enjoy your kryptonite, whether that be a latte, Diet Coke, sheet cake, or Malbec. You are powerful. I remember that I was so excited for Christian's first practice when he started soccer. It took some redirection and assistance because he was scared at first, but then he got out there. That left us sitting on the grass. I quickly realized that I am the worst soccer mom ever. Here are just a few reasons why. It's outdoors. I'm like a proverbial smorgasbord to any insect, flying or otherwise. I'm also never prepared for the conditions. I've worn a tank top and frozen. I've also worn a hoodie and sweated to death. I've recently learned that layers are my best friend, but the outdoors, we are often not on speaking terms. There is something about soccer that makes me lose any marbles I had left jingling around in the jar I call my mind. Gatorade? We'll stop at the next gas station and get a bottle. There are supposed to be 2 cleats, right? Note to self, shin guards go inside the socks. Oh, you're playing at the goals on the other side of the acre-long field of mud when I got such a stellar parking spot over here. There must be something mesmerizing about that black and white ball that makes me lose all common sense. I'm an overprotective parent, hovering just on the edge of helicoptering. Fine, my helicopter mom of the month trophy is at the engravers right now. It really does come with the territory of being a special needs parent. When I found out that parents have to sit on the opposite side of the field as the team, I freaked out a little. Fine, a lot. Boys roughhouse. I know that. But that can turn into serious business for CJ very quickly. And he has no attention span. Hello, the word deficit is right in the description of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. So I apologize to all who have heard me yell for Christian to pay attention to the game. The first time my boy got knocked down on the field, I was ready to turn into a one-woman ambulance while simultaneously plotting revenge on the juvenile barbarian that committed the heinous act of kicking the ball towards the goalie. Why are they grabbing at his jersey? Don't they know we paid good money for that? The parents on the opposing team aren't going to pay the copay for broken bones. Why are they cheering their child knocking into mine? I am all about the game when he's on the field, but I really have no clue what to do with myself when he's not. I try to cheer for the kids on the field, but often find myself cheering for the wrong things. Great teamwork carrying Gatorade and snacks together to the bench! I've also gotten the look of death from my son for my use of endearing terms. Apparently, Pooh Bear is not appropriate to yell at the goalie when he blocks a great shot. I try to talk to the other soccer moms, and I'm left to feel like I'm on an awkward first date. The soccer field isn't the best place to pick up mommy friends, even if I offer them Starbucks from a paper bag. Being a soccer mom is nothing like I thought it would be, and I'm pretty bad at it. But I'm at every game I can be at. I remember the snacks on when it's our week because it's emblazoned on my phone, planner, and sometimes my hand. I always participate in the high five line for both teams and know the difference between a great win and a sad loss hug. I just might be the worst, best soccer mom there is after all. Man, do the small things pile up. One negative comment, one extra project, one shortened deadline, One tummy ache, one stupid argument, one unexpected bill, one broken nail, one out of order sign, one longer line, one more red light. Sure, none of those things seem too bad on their own, but when we focus on the negative, they seem to grow into a large cloud to rain over our entire parade. They are all we think about when we discuss our day, and all we can think about when we fall asleep at night. One day after another of this, and we can easily find ourselves worn down and worn out. It's easier to focus on the negative, which can send us onto a sick cycle, spiraling out of control. I admit I can be guilty of getting stuck in the negative, which leads me to take things out on those I love the most. My son didn't cause the light to turn red, and my husband didn't put up the out of order sign. But for some reason, they get the brunt of all of those things. They get the cranky and tired me at the end of the day. They get the leftovers from my coworkers and fellow commuters. It's not fair to them at all, especially when they are my reason for smiling so very often. At the end of the day, it's best to ditch the negative and stop allowing all of that to live rent-free in our souls, and to work to think of the positive. Those are the things that day in and day out will fuel your soul and make you remember why you're alive in the first place. An extra kiss on the forehead. A reach for my hand in the car. That last smile before he drifts off to sleep. A warmed-up car. A pink gumball. A cold soda left for me in the fridge. An unexpected hug while I cook. A stolen loving glance. The offer for a stuffed animal to help me feel better. A text message on his break. Robert Brault once said, "Enjoy the little things, for one day you'll look back and realize that they were the big things." Man, do the small things pile up. Wrestling was a way of life in my house growing up. Some families watch telenovelas or soap operas together. We do the same in my family, just with added spandex and pyrotechnics. I spent so many Saturday mornings on my dad's knee watching and being mesmerized by the definitely scripted stories and the definitely real athleticism. Forget Barbie. Miss Elizabeth was a real-life version of a doll in my eyes. Looking back, I now realize that she was arm candy and nothing more. As I grew up, the women were known more for their lingerie matches and Playboy centerfolds. It was disheartening to say the least. More importantly, it was an introduction to a world that didn't value women as equals. I stopped watching wrestling during my teenage years. I scoffed when my husband told me he watched wrestling, but he exclaimed that things were different. I watched the likes of Lita and Trish Stratus with him, women who were as athletic as they were beautiful. As they wrestled in a historic main event on a show I grew up watching, I really believed that there was a chance for equality. That match, unfortunately, was the exception to the norm, as the past reared its ugly head. In between filler matches, I saw way too many over-sexualized costume contests. I started to give up again as the company searched to find the next diva that they'd give their butterfly-shaped championship belt to. After a match that took less than 30 seconds of a 3-hour show, the hashtag GiveDivasAChance was born and changed the face of professional wrestling forever. As time went on, we were introduced to the Four Horsewomen, Becky Lynch, Bayley, Sasha Banks, and Charlotte Flair, who paved the path of opportunity for many others. Little girls watching wrestling now have real role models, and young men like my son can realize that women are capable of doing anything that men can do. During this year's WrestleMania, a family tradition, I watched my favorite wrestler, Nia Jax, overcome bullying based on her size to win her first championship. After decades of watching everyone else get theirs, I finally saw someone just like me be given their chance to live out a dream. The road to equality certainly has taken a long time in the world of professional wrestling, but I believe we are finally there. Stephanie McMahon, Chief Brand Officer for the WWE, has lived through every era of women's wrestling. Therefore, it was only fitting that she was the one that announced that on October 28th, WWE will hold its first ever all-women's pay-per-view, aptly named Evolution. as she continued to mention that the show would feature more than 50 women from the past, present, and future of the business. I got chills and tears came to my eyes. Over 30 years of watching glorified bathroom breaks and grotesque gender inequality have led to this. That wide-eyed little girl is ready. That frustrated teenager is ready. This proud fan and woman is ready. Then, now, forever.
Oh, how I wish you could be nine forever, Pooh Bear, I exclaimed as I laid next to my boy. It was the night before his 10th birthday, and I knew that when he woke up the next morning, he'd be a year older, though technically not until 7:55 that evening. It was a wish that would never be granted, though I really meant it. In almost every way, nine was fine. In fact, it was more than fine. It had been my favorite year of parenting. I really like sleep, so the newborn years weren't my jam. He was a cute baby, but babies really don't do anything, even though you tell everyone that they're a step away from inventing the next big thing. It's often said that once they start walking or talking that the fun begins, but for us, that was when we started with diagnoses and therapies, and honestly, the years leading up to nine were a blur of appointments, meetings, and trying to make the pieces fit to hit our stride as a family. But nine? Nine was so different, and so kind to us. It wasn't without its faults, but the year was filled with so many great memories. Between school and friends, taekwondo and soccer, holidays and vacations, nine was certainly a year to remember. He was old enough to entertain himself, but young enough to still want his mom sometimes. He was old enough that we could watch him be in his element at the Lego store without hovering, but young enough that he still sat on Santa's lap with requests. I'd explain to Christian this as I stroked his hair and breathed in these last moments of this age. Having only one child is perfect for our family in so many ways, but it also means that our firsts are always our lasts. That part breaks my heart every time. But as he always seems to do in the clutch for me, he snapped me out of my melancholy with his prepubescent voice of reason. But Mama, what if 10 is even better? We'll never know if we don't go to sleep. Tears sprang to my eyes, but they weren't tears of mourning for the 9-year-old I'd lose once he hit the land of Nod. These tears, they were tears of hope for the 10-year-old I'd meet the next morning. Yes, he would look and act the same, but he would be different in my eyes. There's something about double digits that really gets to a mother. I was reminded of our conversation a few weeks later when I was eating my lunch at my desk and bit into the sweetest cherry I'd ever had. I nibbled on it and didn't want the vibrant taste to end. But despite my best efforts, it was gone. I'll blame it on hormones, but I was legitimately sad that I'd finished this cherry. I remembered the conversation I had with my now 10-year-old and popped the next cherry into my mouth. And you know what? That one was pretty tasty as well. Just like 10 has been good to us thus far. The holiday season is upon us, and that often means celebratory meals with our loved ones and plates upon plates of homemade goodies to further demonstrate those warm and fuzzy feelings. Simultaneously, it can also be filled with apprehension and dread for those recovering from or currently dealing with an eating disorder. Anorexia and I became acquainted at a very young age. Bulimia was a coping mechanism that I turned to during my 20s. Eating disorders are very secret and as a result, very scary. I am very open about my battles with eating disorders because I want others to know that they aren't alone. Eating disorders come in many forms and does not discriminate. Most people are aware of anorexia and bulimia, but binge eating and restrictive food intake disorders are also common and can affect all people, physically, psychologically, and socially. Eating disorders do not care what your race, gender, or socioeconomic background are. Much like mental health, an eating disorder can be caused by genetics, biology, culture, or personality. You do not need a diagnosis
to have an eating disorder. I am by no means an expert on eating disorders, but I was recently asked by a loved one as to what they could do this holiday season to help me. I give them a lot of credit for recognizing my past and for wanting to help me, but I need to take responsibility as well. I am sharing what I told them and what I am telling myself as well. How to cope with an eating disorder around the holidays. Set boundaries for yourself and others. Use your voice and tell others, even ahead of time, that you do not want comments on how you look or what you are eating. Formulate responses to questions or statements that could make you feel uncomfortable, guilty, or shamed. Remember that this includes you as well. Try to eliminate or limit this negative self-talk, because if you're anything like me, the things that you say to yourself are worse than anything anyone else could ever say. Remember that you can excuse yourself from any situation you are not comfortable in, even if it is just temporary. Live. Eat the meal. Try not to count calories in your head and do not step on the scale after. You are so much more than any number, and those numbers do not encompass your life. If you do find yourself struggling, reach out to someone you know you can talk to and who can help you through that feeling of fullness without heading to the bathroom or the feelings of guilt before you lift your fork. Have that support system ready and do not be afraid to utilize it. How to help. Remember that words have power. If you haven't seen someone in a while, do not comment on their weight or what is on their plate. Comment on how happy they look or ask them how they've been. Tell them how delicious the insert dish here looks or how you are looking forward to conversation at the table. Even if someone isn't officially diagnosed with an eating disorder, keeping your comments about what someone else is eating to yourself, it's just good practice in general. Also be mindful of what you post on social media. New Year's resolutions are coming up, and the push for weight loss often comes with it. Charts with calorie counts and how to burn it all off can be very triggering. Be part of their support system. If someone reaches out to you, do not shun or shame them. Validate their feelings and help them through it. Negate their self-depreciating talk and remind them of their value. Hold their hand. Do not be offended if someone walks away or becomes silent suddenly. Give them some space, but also show you care. I am not recovered by any means. I can pinpoint the beginning of my bulimia to the Thanksgiving after my godfather passed away unexpectedly. I still think about purging from time to time, and especially during the holiday meals that are centered in eating and drinking. A friend recently commented and nailed my feelings about eating in the holidays by saying, "I'm already feeling guilt and shame about holiday food, and I haven't eaten a bite of it yet." No one is bulletproof when it comes to holiday anxiety. It just comes to us all differently. Remember to give yourself grace. Remember that regardless of what you consumed or dealt with the day before, that you must continue on. If you are struggling with an eating disorder this holiday season, please reach out to Nita. They have been a great resource for me. Also know that I am here for you as well. Please reach out to me. Find me on social media. Pinterest is a fantastic idea, in theory. It's a great way to waste time in the pickup line, at the doctor's office, or during yet another sports practice. You can find ideas for meals your family will never eat. What is bok choy and can I find it by the peanut butter? Hairstyles that only you swoon over. Does that style make me look less tired? Dream vacations that look like all play. Do any of these itineraries take into account meltdowns, both child and adult? Ways to pretend to organize your house. Do dirty clothes end in the hamper at other people's houses and not the sink? And exercise plans that exhaust you looking at them. What is a Russian twist, and do I need a passport? You can organize all of your pins neatly in folders that make you look like you have your life more together than you really might. If you were to accomplish every single thing that you've pinned, you would never have time to eat what you cooked, go to the bathroom, let alone on a vacation, or enjoy your organized house as you'd be cleaning it 24/7, 365. If you're a mom, chances are that you've fallen right into the Pinterest trap, and more than likely you have suffered a Pinterest fail, or 10. The Pinterest complex is real, and it makes you question your abilities as a wife, mother, and woman. In the past 2 weeks, I've made teachers' gifts and prepared for a 10th birthday party. For some reason that I will never fully understand, I decided to look at Pinterest for ideas. I searched for teacher gifts and Minecraft birthday party favors. I instantly regretted it. As a full-time working mother, I knew that my end results would never look as perfect or polished as the professional blogger's gifts or favors. When I was struggling to make the perfect or the gift basket look right and to figure out how to perfect the creeper face, it hit me. I was taking time away from my very reason for needing to pin the ideas in the first place. I could have perfected the pins, but I'd be missing cuddles and game nights with my boy. Being a type A creative perfectionist, or control freak if you ask my husband, I knew I had to find a happy medium. I lowered my expectations a bit and asked my son to get involved. In the end, we all want the same outcome. When it comes to birthday parties, we want our children and guests to have fun together. When it comes to teachers' gifts, we want the teachers to know how much we appreciate them for teaching our kids and putting up with them on the days we're glad to have dropped them off. As moms, we must give each other a little grace. Whether you give a teacher a personalized gift basket or throw a Starbucks gift card in your kid's backpack, said teacher will be delighted. Whether the goodie bag at the birthday party is banging, or if your kiddo comes home without one, remember the effort that goes into throwing a birthday party. Whether the cake is store-bought or a themed cupcake cake, it will all get happily eaten by sugar-hungry children. No matter how we do it, all that matters is we somehow always get the job done.
For more information on our show, including where you can find us on social media or watch this show on YouTube, go to theblakeandsalshow.com. Don't forget to comment or leave a rating and review, and we will read it on the show.
Thank you so very much. Goodbye, mwah, and good night.
Bye-bye, bitch.